The environment is often discussed as a scientific or political issue. But how does our faith influence our interaction with natural resources? How does one's theology or worldview inform one's understanding of and interaction with the environment? Good morning. This is Faith Matters on 89.9 WJCT. I'm Kyle Reese, senior pastor of Hendricks Avenue Baptist Church and board member of One Jacks.
And I'm Nancy Bronner, executive director of One Jacks, an institute of the University of North Florida. Faith Matters is WJCT's quarterly program, taking a closer look at today's issues through the lens of faith. The Memorial Day holiday is the unofficial beginning of summer, when many Floridians and guests from around the world enjoyed our numerous natural resources. Being stewards of the environment is a central part of many faith traditions. How does your faith affect your appreciation for and interaction with nature? Is the environment a gift to be stewarded by faithful human beings or something else? Most people of faith would express appreciation for nature, but how many groups are intentional in incorporating nature as a part of their programming and focus? Today, we're bringing together voices from a variety of perspectives and faiths to talk about the relationship between faith and environmental stewardship.
Here to begin our conversation this morning are Mark Woods, columnist with the Florida Times Union and author of the book Lassoing the Sun, A Year in America's National Parks. Good morning, Mark.
Morning. Thanks for having me.
Also, we're glad to welcome Dr. Quentin White, executive director of the Marine Science Research Institute and professor of biology and marine science at Jacksonville University. Good morning.
Good morning.
You can join our conversation this morning by calling 549-2937. We want to hear your views.
And later in today's program, we'll hear different perspectives on this issue from practitioners of various faiths. So let's start with you, Dr. White. What environmental assets do we have here in Jacksonville?
Oh, golly day, where do we start? when you think about it, you know, you can drive 20 minutes out of Jacksonville, and even in the heart of Jacksonville, we have the St. John's River, and you can bike, and you can hike, and you can swim, and you can kayak, and you can canoe. We are so blessed with so much in this area that I think in a lot of times we oftentimes take it for granted.
Mark, you wrote a series of articles a little over a year ago, I believe, that you walked across Jacksonville.
Right.
Talk a little bit about what you experienced regarding the environmental strengths of our community.
Sure. I started on the very northern edge of Nassau County, and right after, I guess, leaving Rennie's Redneck Yacht Club there.
There we go.
crossed the Nassau River. I chose that purposefully because I wanted to start there in Timaquan Preserve, you know, one of our local national parks. And the idea that, you know, you want to talk old Florida, there's nothing more old Florida than that right there, that some of that land and water there. And, as Quentin was mentioned, that's just the resources we have there are unbelievable in those 40-some thousand acres of the preserve. And then we have the ocean, and we have... so that I started the walk with that natural aspect, and then you came, you know, gradually down Main Street toward, you know, across the river and headed down to toward Mandarin and Julington Creek there. So, but all along the way, yes, you hit little, you know, beautiful. You know, you get farther south, you hit the trees in Mandarin Road, and there's just interesting things even in the more urban environment.
Dr. White, how do you even begin the conversation to talk about what's humankind's responsibility to address our challenges and to celebrate these assets?
Well, I think when you start thinking about it, most people want to enjoy the environment, don't want to think that their actions are detrimental. And so as you start thinking about it, I mean, I know a lot of people that talk about, oh, I'm not particularly religious, but I'm spiritual, and they get some of their spirituality from being in nature and being out and about and doing things. And so I think that's where the balance starts. And I do think an awful lot of people, while they may not be overly conscious of it, the idea that we are stewards of our environment is sort of a fundamental reality for them. People may not discuss it, but if you actually get into a conversation with them, it'll come out in the conversation.
Mark, you've just written the book where you have visited America's national parks. And from knowing your story, talk about ways that your minister father and mother's faith perspective influenced your views on the environment and kind of how they informed this project.
Sure. My dad was a Baptist minister who last 20 years of his life was a chaplain at a hospital, and my mom was a teacher, social worker. But yeah, for growing up, the most sacred places weren't man-made places. You know, they were when we were out in these natural places. And I always had a sense of that. And it wasn't so much that they would be talking those terms. I just could feel that reverence when we went to the national parks or, you know, even just a weekend camping trip that and our church had a tree farm. We'd go there and all these places. I don't think I even thought about it at the time, but I look back and all that was kind of seeping in. And these felt like the most sacred places, more so than the sanctuary of the church where my dad preached.
You know, both of you have expressed the viewpoint that most people really see our environmental assets as gifts to be protected. But do you see, Quentin, much action that puts that belief into action where people appreciate our assets? But what's the next step in terms of putting that faith in our environment into action? Do you see that?
I do. I think we do. I think you see an awful lot of people that are activists that want to protect the environment and feel a call to doing it. But I think you also find an awful lot of people, and I call them the sort of the silent majority. There are a lot of people that support it. They're not actively doing stuff, but they're the ones who are thinking about it in their home, and they're doing the little things. They're conservation. They're thinking about water reuse. They're thinking about recycling. I had somebody complained the other day about the city's recycling program, the fact they've cut back on what they can recycle. And he was complaining, I used to fill up my recycling bin. Now I'm filling up my trash can. And he wasn't happy about it. Well, that's the kind of person I think that sort of the average person out there. And they in some ways, I'm going to use the analogy Mark was using, they worship the sunrise in the morning. They enjoy that. That's their quiet time. And you engage people in conversation, and sometimes it's not something that's going to be a top of the mind kind of thing, but over time they'll talk about, yes, that's when I feel close to God. That's when I feel there is a spirituality in the world that we live in and that we've got to do what we can to protect the environment.
We want you to join our conversation by calling 549-2937. We're talking with Dr. Quentin White and Mark Woods about faith and the environment and how we can be stewards of our natural resources. Mark, going back to your upbringing, you mentioned to us that your parents were missionaries on a Native American land, and that informed their understanding of the environment. Talk a little bit about what you think they drew from that experience.
Right. It was in Reno, Nevada. We moved there when I was about 6 and there till I was about 10. So a lot of my national park experiences are from that time period. We'd go out west. But then, yes, in my dad's daily job working on this reservation, if you think of spirituality and religion, Native American traditions, it's inseparable. I mean, their world is, you know, the sun, the moon, the wind, water, that is built into their daily life, into their faith. I don't think you could say, oh, this is one piece of it and this is another. I mean, and so I think, I think that is where some of my mom and dad's views came from, because they came from this Midwestern small town in Illinois that I don't look at their grandparents and necessarily, my grandparents and necessarily see that. So I've sometimes wondered, why is it so embedded in my mom and dad? And I think some of it may be traced to those 4 years and that time out west in that Native American traditions.
We have, let's go to the phones and take a call from John. John, you're on the air. Go ahead with your question or comment.
Well, good morning, and thank you for taking my call.
Good morning.
I'm just traveling along within Duval County on the interstate right now, and just looking at the different various tree canopies. And, you know, when I think about relating to nature, what I just want to tie it in, if I can, there was a recent story in the Florida Times Union about the tree canopy. And there's also will be a pending settlement where there was a tree fund, and we seem to have misplaced $6 million of tree fund trust money. And so going forward, and this connection, you know, with the environment, I would hope that we would can get some type of a settlement out of that, where you can use the river canopy, and this could be at boat launches, kayak launches, and instead of that asphalt that you see in every boat ramp, maybe in some parts of it, use some of that tree fund settlement money that's still pending. And think about this when the boaters, the kayakers, and they come out and they have that fresh water in their coolers from the ice that's melted. Instead of dumping it on the asphalt, dump it into that tree that has been planted to provide the shade, and then remind everybody of just the of how we really celebrate this St. John's River or American Heritage River, a federal initiative. And
thank you, John.
Comment from both. Thank you.
I think you're a perfect illustration of what Dr. White was talking about, a person who understands and appreciates natural resources. You point to a recent Times Union article, Mark Woods.
Yes, we've written about tree canopy, and I think you will see this tree fund money in the news more. And just broadly, I'm kind of interested. Whenever I've written, I think I wrote about this centennial oak down on the southern edge of. Whenever I write about a tree that comes down, I think that's one thing in Jacksonville goes across political lines. It's people, we love our trees, and we've done a better job here of preserving them than a lot of other places in the state. You know, if you go in South Florida and drive down the highway, as he's describing, all you see is billboards, and you don't see trees. We can do a better job, and hopefully we will do a better job in the future. But yes, that's one piece that I love about Jacksonville is we have this remarkable tree canopy.
Yeah, but the tree canopy, you've got to make sure that you maintain it because trees don't live forever, which is something I'm not sure everybody understands.
Right.
The JU campus, for instance, we took a horrible hit during Matthew and lost a lot of trees. Well, the response has been we've been planting trees, and that's what you've got to do. And you don't plant a tree, frankly, for you. You're planting it for your grandchildren. Mm-hmm. And we got to think that way.
Quentin, what about John's suggestion about the boat ramps? Talk about that a little bit, about instead of asphalt, maybe some more natural reflection.
Yeah, well, I think the idea, you can, in fact, go in and do more landscaping in the boat ramps. People need the asphalt, quite frankly, because otherwise the material that you put down will wash into the river, which is a bad thing. So asphalt in that situation is not so bad. It's going to prevent runoff into the river. But we could do a better job of having trees, canopies around the boat ramps and the kayak launches, things like that. And John's idea is dead on right about the idea when you come back, dump that old water at the base of a tree. Don't just throw it on the asphalt. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there are a lot of people that do that and think that way. Mm-hmm. And that's what I want to point out, that, you know, not everybody is cavalier about it. And even a lot of people who, I'm going to say, do harm, don't sort of think about it, and they don't realize they're doing it. And so I think the better job we can do at educating people to make sure they understand what the consequences of their actions are, the better off they're going to be.
Mm-hmm. So let's take another call. We're going to speak with Tracy from Mandarin. Tracy, thank you for calling. Go ahead.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I am from India, and in our culture, we pray in front of moon, pray in front of sun, we go to holy river Ganges, and we have very special two trees we have planted in our temple. We pray in front of that, and they give you a lot of power, and they give you a lot of good feeling, but that's the culture we have been taught from childhood. so I can connect with the guest what he's saying. Thank you for taking my call. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you,
thank
Tracy.
Thank you, Tracy. Dr. White, there's, I would dare say there are very few people that are more involved in our community and its natural resources than you are. How have you seen particular faith groups put their faith in action to care for the environment like Tracy is speaking to?
Well, I think some are more obvious than others. Unitarian Church is very active in utilizing the environment. And if you've been to their sanctuary, or I'm not sure they call it sanctuary, mm-hmm. but their meeting place, you feel very much part of nature. And I think a lot of other faiths embrace it. I happen to be lay leader at Southside United Methodist Church, and I know that our church sort of embraces that sort of philosophy. And so I think you see it throughout the community in lots and lots of ways.
And in the community garden phenomenon that is taking place at a lot of faith groups, churches, a lot going on in our natural resources. Mark, as you traveled the country writing your book, what observations have you seen of faith groups and their interaction in the environment around the country?
Well, it was interesting that the caller just called in. I think when we chatted about this before, I mentioned how I spent time in a national recreation area in New York City and went to a Hindu temple in Queens and heard some of the things she's talking about, how nature is a part of their tradition. So you have that to Native American tribes out west to... I was thinking how, you know, you think about Catholicism, and the Pope right now has made the environment a huge, from day one, piece of his mission. You know, he talked about destroying the environment as he believes is a sin. So you have kind of, it's not just some new age, funky religions. You have some of this steeped in tradition, ancient religions that have made it a piece of their faith and of their mission, their modern day mission.
And that was a focus of our show today, because I dare say you wouldn't find any person to come in and say, no, I'm against
right.
nature. Okay, but how can we intentionally incorporate the environment into our faith traditions?
If you're just joining us, we're speaking with Mark Woods and Quentin White, both of whom have deep roots in our community and a lot of experience in the area of the environment and faith. You can join our conversation this morning by calling 549-2937. So, Mark, you just mentioned the Pope's strong position on the environment. Pope Francis actually issued the first ever papal encyclical on the environment, and he had rather strong words to say to our world about the environment. He said, as stewards of God's creation, we are called to make the earth a beautiful garden for the human family. When we destroy our forests, ravage our soil, and pollute our seas, we betray that noble calling. Rather strong words that implore us to protect this world that God has given us. So,
amen and amen.
Preaching to the choir.
Yes.
Yeah, right.
So let's go back to the phones. We'll speak with Larry. Larry, go ahead with your comment, please.
Good morning. Dr. White, you had mentioned a few minutes ago that people don't understand the consequences of their actions. And that got me to thinking particularly about nutrients in the river and algae blooms. Most of it, I believe, is caused by fertilizer runoff. And I was telling the call screener, I think this is probably going to be a particularly bad year for algae blooms in the river and lakes. I'm just coming up from the Crescent Lake area, and we've already had one or two down here this year so far. And it's not even July yet. So I was wondering what your thoughts are on how people can get more involved in limiting nutrients that go into the river and cause these terrible algae blooms.
Thank you, Larry.
Yeah.
Quentin?
A good point, and I'm afraid I share your concern. We had a very mild winter, And so we never really had the cold weather that sometimes kills back some of these things. We've got a very high nutrient load right now in the river. And you're right. A lot of this has to do with the little things we do. And that's what I want to sort of emphasize. And people don't really always think about, well, the fertilizer I'm putting on my yard makes that problem. It's the other guy's fertilizer. And yet, if you could reduce or even eliminate fertilizer in your yard, make sure that you use the proper fertilization. You don't need any phosphorus in it, for instance. And so you sort of look at how you live your life, how much you water. My wife and I joke a little bit because we have a sprinkler system. We never use it. I don't fertilize. And so we mow our weeds. But we have a nice-looking weed collection on our yard. And so it bothers me when I see people, particularly when it's raining and they're watering or watch them fertilize, because we have a tendency to think if a little bit's good, a lot's better. And that's a perfect example, I think, of things that people can do. Take care of the little things, because if you watch the amount of water you use, you watch the amount of electricity you use, and you limit the amount of fertilizer, limit the amount of watering on your yard, it has a long-term consequence. Even little things like blowing off the leaves and glass clippings into the road, which I watch people do this all the time, they don't think about the fact that it washes down into the drain and goes into the river. So we need a little more education on a global scale. People appreciate nature. They are awestruck and inspired by it. But sometimes when they think about what their actions are doing, they don't quite understand exactly what the consequences are.
And I think that can become, Dr. White, you mentioned earlier, the spiritual but not religious is a tagline that we hear a lot. And nature plays a big part in that. How can particular faith communities catch up and talk about this as a natural part of the faith journey?
So let's go to the phones and take another call. Kevin from Fernandina Beach, go ahead, please.
Yeah, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Yeah, my stance is going to differ from those on the panel a little bit. I apologize in advance. A moment ago, I heard the gentleman mention that he was quite positive about people's stances on the environment and had a good take on it. I beg to differ. I see a slight difference. I'm from Fernandina Beach, and just the other day I was on social media. And someone had posted on a local site, Nassau Rants and Raves, how they had seen a satellite image, from 2008, I guess, a Google Earth photo of Amelia Island. And they were comparing it with today's satellite photo, and they had noticed a considerable loss of tree and canopy. Are you still there?
Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, and I'm going to tell you what the reason for that is we have exponential growth going on Amelia Island. And in Jacksonville as well. I heard statistics the other day that Jacksonville is one of the fifth largest growing cities in the United States, three of which were in Florida. And all this influx of brand new people thus means, cutting of the trees, because each person that comes here wants a new lot, a new house. So the first thing to do is come in and clear the lot out, and thus the reflection on the Google Earth that the person mentioned. And got another take on it. The gentleman mentioned again, he thought that most people thought well of the environment and cared about it. Well, I believe that, and I got a theory for the reasoning, we have a whole new generation of X generation and
yes,
and whatever, the millennials and so forth, and these guys spend most of their time inside playing on electronic gadgets. They do not go outside. They have no relationship whatsoever to the outdoors, and thus it's hard for them to have any concern whatsoever right. about the outdoor. They don't know anything about it, never right. been in it. All it represents is spiders and slimy snakes and nasty things that are appalling.
Right.
They don't really see much of the good in it.
I'm going to tell you
that we're about three generations removed from people that were out in the outdoors, those of us that were born in the 40s or the 50s or the 60s who spent our leisure time out there in the outdoor and thus right. developed a care and concern for it.
Okay. Well, thank you for your call, Kevin. And I think that's you mentioned so many good points, but political, science, and we're talking theology now to how can our faith or worldview commitments influence our interaction with the environment.
And we'll take one last call. Those of you who are on hold, we will please stay on hold. And after the break, we'll come back to your calls. But let's go right now to Sandra Parks. Ms. Parks is the widow of Stetson Kennedy, and we appreciate you calling in. Would you go ahead with your comment, please?
Well, good morning. I think most people in Jacksonville realize that in addition to Stetson's work in civil rights, that environmental activism is one of the things that Stetson has called us to do. In our work with other groups that have this kind of sensitivity, we no longer use the word environmental stewardship. And the reason we don't is that it implies that we humankind are superior to and are called to manage the natural world. We use the term environmental kinship, that we are related, that we are a part of this fabric, that we have a spiritual, personal, cultural, emotional, and sometimes financial connection to the natural world in ways that make us kin to it rather than superior to it. But one of the things that we would encourage faith communities within Jacksonville to do is to partner with religious communities that serve young people who do not have contact with nature. There's a wonderful book called The Last Child in the Woods that has really guided our thinking on this, and we would encourage that this is a really proactive way that that our faith communities can show this kind of interest by seeing to it that kids really get to experience it.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you for that input, and I love the term environmental kinship. Thank you, Ms. Parks. Mark Woods and Quentin White, we thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
You're listening to Faith Matters on 89.9 WJCT. I'm Nancy Bronner, Executive Director of UNF's One Jacks Institute.
And I'm Kyle Reese, Board Member of One Jacks and Senior Pastor at Hendricks Avenue Baptist Church. We'll be right back with more Faith Matters.
Hendricks Avenue Baptist Church is a place to experience Christ's presence and God's Spirit in a vibrant faith community. HAB celebrates diversity, seeks to bridge differences, and journeys together in an honest and authentic search for truth. HABchurch.com. Find a different way of being Baptist.
Join WJCT for Be My Neighbor Day, Saturday, June 3rd from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. at the WJCT studios. The day will include family-friendly activities, PBS Kids characters, food trucks, and so much more. The event is free, but reservations are required. For more information, log on to wjct.org/events.
For everyone creating their own life after 50, WJCT proudly presents Next Avenue, a website where grown-ups keep growing. Visit us at wjct.org/nextavenue.
Convinced you've heard it all before? Well, at Indie Endeavor, we challenge that notion. Tune into WJCT's After Hours for the best songs you've never listened to. Tuesdays at 11 p.m.
Welcome back to Faith Matters, WJCT's quarterly program exploring today's issues through the lens of faith. I'm Nancy Bronner.
and I'm Kyle Reese. If you're just joining us, we're talking about the connection between nature and religious experience. We invite you to join our conversation by calling 549-2937.
We're going to continue our discussion about faith and the environment with a panel of community and faith leaders. Joining us now in the studio are the Reverend Dr. Tom Walker, pastor and head of staff of Palms Presbyterian Church in Jacksonville Beach.
Good morning.
Good morning. Pastor Philip Baber, minister of Unitarian Universalist Church in Jacksonville.
Good morning.
And Adash Shair, structural engineer at HDR Incorporated and former Interfaith Youth Corps coach at University of North Florida.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. Dr. Walker, your church put its faith commitment to the environment into action in the creation of a sacred garden. What was the motivation behind that, and what is the purpose of the garden?
Part of it, as we were designing new buildings for the church, we wanted to make sure that we were focused in also on creation and not... Part of that is in the sense of awe and wonder that in our scripture tradition, creation presents us with awe and wonder for God. And the danger often is when we get around human construction is that we can lose that awe and wonder. So we wanted to, at the very center of our new construction, put a garden. And one of my colleagues, Carol, was working on a DMin, which is a doctorate degree, around sacred space. And so we thought long and hard about how can we have something in the center of our campus that reminds us and centers us again into God's good creation.
And what has been the response in your congregation? And I've been to your sacred garden as a visitor. It's quite moving, and it does inspire a reflective practice. So
that was the intention, that it would be a quiet space, that it would put us back in touch with creation and nature in the midst of the life of the congregation, and the congregation has responded that way. We have people who just come in from the road and who want to sit in that space in the midst of the busyness of their lives and find a time to be restful and relaxing and recentered.
Philip, in the seven principles of the Unitarian Universalist Association, the seventh principle is, and I quote, respect for the interdependent web of all existence of which we are a part. In short, caring for the created order. How have Unitarian Universalists as a movement expressed the relationship between their worldview and the environment, and how has your church in particular done that?
Well, I think that, of course, especially on the Unitarian side of our family, we have our forefathers and foremothers of the Transcendentalist movement. And I think that connection that the Transcendentalists found between nature, between the earth, and a connection to the divine, it really is part of the lifeblood of our faith, even to the present day. And so one way that our congregation here in Jacksonville has expressed this is by being a participant in the Unitarian Universalist Association's Green Sanctuary program, which is a credentialing program that was created to incentivize faith communities to find ways to live more sustainably, to promote environmental justice, things of that nature. So some of the ways that we've done that as a congregation include helping to found the Arlington Community Garden, which helps to create fresh produce for the Arlington Food Bank. It's one of the only sources of organically grown fresh produce for the food bank there in Arlington. We also teach about environmentalism and sustainability, both on the adult level and the children's level with our Sunday school programming. We also try to find ways to actually make it a part of our worship service. So oftentimes we will have worship services that are dedicated to the idea of the earth and sustainability and the environment, so that it truly does become part of the pulse of our congregational life.
Adah, you were active in interfaith work while a student at UNF. Talk about the passion for creation care among your generation.
As a Muslim or in general?
Both.
I did a lot of interfaith work at UNF, and I was one of the coaches for Interfaith Youth Corps, and that is where I learned interfaith, how to dialogue over difference or talk to people who are fundamentally, who believe things that are fundamentally different than yours. And that is where I think I also learned a lot about my own faith as a Muslim. In like many other faiths, the principle of conservation and environmentalism is central to the teachings of Islam. There's a verse that comes to mind from the Quran from chapter 2 that says, and do not commit abuse on the earth, which is a very direct verse that tells you do not create any pollution or do not disrupt the environment as it is.
Such deep expressions of environmental stewardship, or as Ms. Park said, environmental kinship. Let's go to the phones. We've had some people holding for quite a while. Let's talk with Janet. Janet, thank you for holding so long. Go ahead with your comment and question.
I'm with Sierra Club, and I just wanted to mention that we as an environmental organization have teamed with other environmental organizations to leverage each of our strengths and share information. And I think that's part of what's needed here, because there's a lot of respect for the environment and value of the environment expressed, but it's the point at which it intersects with our everyday activities, economic growth, that these issues become more complex. And I think if people were to join environmental organizations, and environmental organizations were to join with spiritual organizations, we could together be stronger and learn more. And it's not just advocacy and lobbying, it's learning about how our practices affect the environment, and making better decisions on as individuals, or helping to lobby for better decisions as a community.
Thank you, Janet. Tom Walker, you mentioned how people have made use of your sacred garden. Just speak a little bit about how that's created conversations that Janet speaks to.
Well, I think one of the ways that it has created conversations is so often we see science and religion, or the environment and faith, as separate issues, as issues that are not in concert with each other, but are actually in argument with each other and their understandings of the world and how we need to move forward together. And what the garden has allowed us to do is, again, center our lives again into this sense of God's creation, and that God has created us all. I was a biology major in college, and one of the things that has provided for me is I've never seen this kind of disjuncture that we often see between science and religion. Both inspire awe, both inspire wonder, and so bringing that together, I think, would be a wonderful thing. Mm-hmm. And because we can start at a common space of awe and wonder at God's created work.
We'll go back to the phones now. We will speak with Judy in Jacksonville. Judy, go ahead with your question or comment. Go ahead, Judy.
All right, Judy, call us back. We do want to hear, I think her question was going to be something about green church guidelines. So Philip, you talked a little bit about your accreditation of your space. Talk a little bit about what you had to do to get that accreditation.
Sure, absolutely. So we actually started the process back in 2006, and it took us about 3 years before we finally achieved accreditation. So this definitely was a difficult process that had some teeth to it. It wasn't just a participation ribbon that was given away. Across our association, only about 260 congregations have achieved this certification, and we are proud to be one of those 261 congregations. So some of the things that we had to do to be able to put ourselves in a position to achieve that certification, we had to put together 12 concrete action steps that focused across four different areas, which included worship and celebration. And so part of what that means is that we make concerns about the environment a part of our worship, from sermons to songs to periodic guest speakers. We also make it part of our religious education. As I had said before, we offer education for both children and adults. We have a sustainable living and ethical eating class that we offer. We've taught our children how to garden. A third area of focus is environmental justice. And as I mentioned before, our participation with the Arlington Community Garden is a part of that. We also offer opportunities for gleaning, so that we can bring more fresh food to people that are in desperate need of it. And then the fourth area of focus has to do with sustainable living projects. And in that way, we have done several things with our sanctuary and our campus to make it more green, trying to increase recycling opportunities, you know, try to take down the ways in which we use paper products and things of that nature. So all of those together are the ways that we were able to get our certification.
Mm-hmm. You're listening to Faith Matters on 89.9 WJCT, and we're talking this morning about the relationship of faith and the environment. Give us a call at 549-2937. We would love for you to be a part of the conversation.
Adal, talk a little bit about a little bit more about your generation, if you can. I know you don't speak for your entire generation, nor for the entire Muslim faith, but in your perspective and your experience, is there a more intentional focus on the environment? Do you see that in your generation and in your work when you were at UNF with Interfaith, or not?
I think there are both sides of the coin here. I see a lot of new initiatives coming up, and are my generation realizing that we need to start taking care of the environment or it's gone forever. Mm-hmm. And on the other hand, I also see a lot of indifference towards the environment. So from my belief, I am personally driven towards sustainable approaches and the environment. But I've also talked to people who just don't see it. They don't see what the problem is. So I would say there's both going on at the same time. But what worries me is that the general opinion that I have seen is an indifference towards this cause. Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Let's talk with Dave. Dave, you're from Fernandina Beach. You're on the air. Go ahead with your comment.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you for your show and for your panel being there.
Thank you. Go ahead.
I would comment that, you know, trees and plants are also God's creation, and I appreciate the faith-based initiatives to help preserve that. So thank you. And to go back to a Fernandina Beach caller's conversation, to make a point, you know, there is a lot of need for development, and I acknowledge that and embrace it. But the way we develop is often we clear-cut trees and that don't need to be cut to develop and probably send them to the paper mill. So I just wanted to make that comment. And my question to your panel would be what efforts can be done to assuage that sort of development where it unnecessarily clears trees?
Okay, thank you for your question. Philip, your property backs up to Tree Hill Nature Center. So perhaps in response to Dave's question, it's a matter of education of faith community and guests that you have on your campus.
I think that's absolutely right. I think that with the creation of our campus about 50 years ago, there was a real intentionality to actually be a part of the landscape and to not make this giant footprint where we cleared out a bunch of trees. We're surrounded by trees in nature, and it's not a detriment. It enhances our ability to be a faith community. And I think that if we could somehow carry over that type of mentality, that type of thinking when it comes to all of our developmental projects and construction projects, we would be better off for it.
Tom, you mentioned this a few moments ago, but we're interested. At Davidson College, you were a biology major.
Yes.
And now you're a senior pastor at Palms Presbyterian. Talk a little bit about that journey.
Well, I in some sense, it was an unexpected journey, but the connection between the two, I think, has always been around just this awe and wonder at God's creation, and that from tiny single-cell amoebas all the way to the complexity of the human genome, and then standing in awe of that. In the scriptures, there's Job, who comes to a final realization of his faith when God stands in front of him and just presents all of this wonder of creation in front of him, from ostriches to eagles flying. And so in some sense, that journey has always been there on the way, because it's always just been standing in that sort of moment. And I think one of the virtues of that is humility, that what nature always reminds us is that there's a humility to our human pride and our human arrogance about the things we build and the right things. And when we get too far away from that, that's why we thought it was very important to have a garden in the center mm-hmm. of our work.
Mm-hmm. And let's go back to the phones, and we're going to talk with Phyllis from the Beaches. Phyllis, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Thank you. I am a member of Tom's Church, and I have learned from that church about the connection to the earth that the immigrants from Ireland and Scotland, the Celtic traditions, have brought, similar to what you were talking about in the first half hour, with Native American traditions, bringing them close to sacred earth. And so I was wondering if the panel would like to talk about Celtic Christianity and its appreciation for thin spaces, which is what I feel we are blessed to have here with our views of the ocean and sunrise over the ocean.
Thank you, Phyllis. Let's hear from Dr. Walker, your pastor, what he has to say about that.
Thank you for the softball, Phyllis. But the Celtic tradition is a part of the Christian tradition that goes way back into the Celts movement. And one of the things that the Celts were very interested in was just nature and being a part of nature. And they had this wonderful idea of thin places. And a thin place is a place where heaven and earth almost are touching each other. And for them, most of those thin places were natural moments, natural places. And they would talk about being able to be in that moment where heaven and earth are almost touching each other. And so like a sunrise, like a walking on the beach as the dolphins swim by, or any of those places where all of a sudden you can feel like you're touching the very essence of God.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think a part of this discussion, and you all have spoken to it, it's what kind of a person do we become when we are surrounded more by the creation of human hands, or when we are surrounded by the environment or the created order, and certainly the kind of people we are becoming is an interest to many of our faiths and worldviews. Let's talk a little bit about action. You've incorporated sacred gardens creation as a part of your campuses. But for any of you, what do you see that's taking your faith community outside your campus and working in the environment?
Our community, that is the Islamic Center of Northeast Florida, is a mosque. It's doing small-scale initiatives to combat problems of environmentalism, but I do think as a community we're a bit behind in doing things like the other churches and communities are doing here. I also think that's because there are other issues we're struggling with right now, and environmentalism is getting the short end of the stick, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. But as an individual and as a Muslim, I do try every day, and I do lag behind. Like, I do use paper cups sometimes and feel sad after that, but it's an ongoing struggle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that something to remember is that a lot of times it is marginalized communities that get the short end of the stick when it comes to our policies regarding the environment. And so there really is a social justice element to the work of environmentalism. So anyone who is on fire and passionate about trying to make this a more just world, and while environmentalism is absolutely a part of that, and I think that one thing that I wanted to respond to Dr. Tom, who had said earlier, this idea of this awe and wonder that is comes with being faced to face with creation. I love that. That's part of what drives me in my spiritual journey as well. And I'd once heard someone say that that in a nutshell is what religion and spirituality is. It is to be confronted by the awe and wonder of creation and then to embrace the responsibility that comes along with that. And to me, that's what my faith journey is about. That's what my congregants are trying to do, to marry the responsibility to the awe and the wonder.
And I think it can come in unexpected places. We've been doing a series at our congregation on mental health because it's Mental Health Awareness Month, and had a mental health professional say that there are studies now that prove that your stress is reduced if you spend 20 minutes in nature every day, and that it's even more reduced if you spend that time near water. And what better place than Jacksonville, Florida, mm-hmm. to be able to spend some time, as we heard earlier, in nature and in water. And I think that could have some interesting effects. I mean, we often think about environmental policy and all of that, but what would happen if we could just have people get out in nature and experience it again, and their own stress reduction mm-hmm. is a piece of that.
Dr. Walker, talk a little bit, because to be environmentally sensitive, there is a cost there is a cost to buying biodegradable cups and plates. And so in the limited resources of congregational life, how do you strike a balance between those two things?
Oh, that's an easy question.
That's getting you back for that softball earlier.
That's right. Well, I think in any relationships there are cost. There's give and take. And so I think congregations live into commitments that they have. A friend of mine has just written a dissertation on creation and talks about it not in terms of stewardship but in terms of covenant. And covenant has responsibilities and offerings in the same time. And so that in a covenant relationship, you're constantly having to give and take and figure out what are my responsibilities, and that will cost me. And so I think congregational leadership is asking questions about how to assume certain costs, but realizing that that's part of their responsibility as well.
I was going to say that every budget is a moral document. And if you want to know what your true values are, take a look at your checkbook, take a look at where you spend your money. And I just echo everything that Reverend Dr. Tom just said there.
And we'll go take one more call. Tom, you've been on hold quite a while. Thank you so much for hanging in there. Go ahead with your comment.
Thank you, ma'am. I just wanted to say that I grew up in the Unitarian Church, and I currently attend St. Pete's on Temecula, where we have a pretty nice, pretty green campus. And having been brought up with the values of stewardship, I'm just wondering if there is any movement within the faith community to head off the dredging project, which seems to be pending. Environmental disaster.
Thank you, Tom. Well, we're going to let Philip try that one.
Oh, thanks. I wish I had gotten a softball instead of that one. But, I think that particularly within the Unitarian Universalist faith, we have a lot of folks that are very mindful of the issues that are facing all of us, as in a community. So I know that within my own congregation, there are folks that have been talking about that, and there are, differing views on exactly what that is. A lot of these issues are complex and nuanced. So I wish I had enough time to be able to go into greater depth on that, but I probably don't.
Thank you so much, and thanks all of you for participating today, all the callers, and our guests Tom Walker, Philip Baber, and Adash Shair. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You're
thank
listening
you.
To Faith Matters on 89.9 WJCT. I'm Nancy Bronner, Executive Director of UNF's One Jacks Institute.
And I'm Kyle Reese, Board Member of One Jacks and Senior Pastor at Hendricks Avenue Baptist Church.
We're committed to bringing you diverse opinions and perspectives on matters of faith, and we'll be returning each quarter with new voices to add to these conversations.